Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 1st, 2017. This is episode 1400. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TECHGUY. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and, you know, all the computer stuff, computery stuff. Although, is it, maybe that's not the word anymore. Is it about computers anymore or is it about technology? I mean, they're all computers, but what does that even mean? Self-driving cars, augmented reality. A couple of big numbers this week. Thursday was the 10th anniversary of the release of the first iPhone in 2007, June 29th, 2007. I waited in line. I didn't wait in line as long as some. There were people who waited in line for days, I think, to get it. I only waited in line. I went to the local, was it AT&T by then? I think it was. Singular store, AT&T store. And I think I waited a total of, was it 3 hours or 6 hours? A few hours. We all brought chairs. It was a very convivial bunch. I didn't go to the Apple store. I went to the AT&T store because that was in town. That was nearby. Plus, I saw the line was fairly short, and I was lucky. They didn't run out. We don't see lines much anymore. The new chief of Apple retail, Angela Ahrendts, who came to Apple from Burberry. She was the CEO of Burberry, and Apple made her a very big offer to leave her CEO job, her boss job, to just run retail. But probably a good move. She thinks, and I agree with her, it's not very nice to customers to make them wait in line. It's good for marketing, but not really good for business. So now you pre-order, and, you know, it arrives via FedEx or UPS or whatever. 10 years ago, and it really did change the world. I mean, we have to acknowledge that the iPhone, you know, one of the biggest changes was that the iPhone created a mass market for the little doohickeys inside the iPhone, like accelerometers, small chips, small cameras, small screens. One example is Gorilla Glass. Corning, the creators, the inventors of Gorilla Glass, had created this very tough, hard-to-break glass, but couldn't find an audience for it. Nobody seemed to want it. And they were about to shut the plant down when Apple comes to them in secret and says, we might want to be buying a quantity of that special tough glass. Corning fired up the furnaces. And, of course, now Gorilla Glass is featured on the front of pretty much every smartphone out there because, after all, that's a really vulnerable part, that big face of glass. And even though Apple doesn't admit it, they don't brand it, it's been Corning Glass for 10 years. It's been that Gorilla Glass. In fact, the only reason I know that for sure is because Apple gave Corning a giant grant just a month ago or two. To continue development of tough glass. Well, you wouldn't do that if you weren't buying it from Corning, right? So that's number one, 10 years ago. Number two, 2 billion. That's the number Facebook, and if you're a Facebook user, you know this because they made a big deal about it on Facebook. Did you see your special just for you video that all 2 billion of us got with, you know, celebrating the 2 billion and how sharing is caring and all that stuff. 2 billion monthly active users, which is a lot when you think that it's probably, that's, I mean, how many internet users are there in this planet? Maybe 3 billion? Certainly no more than 4 billion. So 2 billion is at the very least half of everybody's on the internet. Wow. Wow. That is a stunning number. It means, it's very powerful because it means it's in all likelihood everybody you know is on Facebook. All your family members or most are on Facebook. So that's a lock-in. You know, you could go to use some other social network. There's one called Elo. E-L-O. Isn't that what it is? I can't even remember. I think it's Elo. It was created to compete with Facebook. But because you can't with any certainty say that anybody you know is on there, what good is it? But mom and dad and sis and bro and my friends at work and everybody's on Facebook. So that's a big number. That's a giant number. And then while we don't know exactly what the numbers are, there's another big number, and that is the number of computers in the world affected by a new virus called PETCHA. PETCHA is, remember the WannaCry? PETCHA is similar to that. It's not exactly ransomware. It threatens to wipe your files if you don't pay up. Funnily, there is a PETCHA Twitter feed watching the Bitcoin address. Because, when they want ransom from you, they say, well, send us Bitcoin to this address. So that address is public. And the nature of Bitcoin is you can actually see deposits to that address. Not much. Under $100,000, last time I checked. It isn't about the money. It's about the disruption, the economic disruption to the West. The percentage of infections by country is very high in Ukraine. In fact, the experts think, that PETCHA started with a Ukrainian accounting firm. Probably hacked. I doubt they did it on purpose, since it's easily traced back to them. And then it spread from there. It was infecting their software, MiDoc. I don't know if you use MiDoc, but if you do, you know. And of course, the vast number of infections hit the Ukraine, and then the Russian Federation, and then Poland, Italy, Germany. Not so much here in the U.S. so far. Takes advantage of some of the same flaws in Windows that WannaCry did, taking advantage of the fact that these were discovered by our NSA, our National Security Agency, held on to by the NSA secretly, so they could use them to spy on people, and then accidentally leaked out. And that meant that bad guys had access to these attacks. Was a new one was used as well, that was also in the NSA treasure trove of attacks. This, as I said, with when WannaCry came out, this is not the last we've seen of this. We'll see more. Good news. Now, the intelligence community, and they don't reveal their sources or their information, so we can't really verify this independently. But the intelligence community said that WannaCry, the ransomware from a couple of months ago, came out of North Korea. They're saying this one comes out of Russia. And that's why it doesn't matter, according to experts, how much money it makes. It's not about the money. That the really is about disruption, about economic disruption. And man, PETCHA did that. The big container company, Maersk, if you ever sail the seven seas, you'll see container vessels, giant boats with Maersk containers on them, M-A-E-R-S-K. It's a Danish company. Their operations were virtually shut down by this PETCHA. And they're back up, but they're doing it by hand because their computers are devastated. Probably targeted, because if you're gonna undermine Western democracy, a good way to do it would be to shut down shipping. Cover story in Wired magazine this month says that that Ukraine is a test tube for Russian state hackers, because of course Russia's at war with Ukraine, so they can try out all of these attacks. preparing to use them against us. Get ready, including shutting down the electric grid. Oh, we live in interesting times, the old Chinese curse. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. We can talk about these and other fascinating subjects, what your next phone will be, what computer you should get, what operating system is best. 888-827-5536. Your phone calls are next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the website, techguylabs.com. When you call, you will be speaking to Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good 4th of July weekend.
It is, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Tuesday is the is Independence Day, as somebody pointed out on Facebook. 4th of July is everywhere.
Yes.
But Independence Day is here. So Independence Day. Canadians celebrating today. Canada Day.
Yeah.
So happy Canada Day.
Happy Canada Day to our
Canadian listeners.
Fellows up north.
All over the world we have listeners.
Yes, we do.
So have you been slaving over a hot phone all morning?
All morning. Yeah, we got Steve in Riverside scanning documents into his computer and wants to make sure they're secure once they get there.
Ah, that's a good question.
And how to do that.
How would we do that? Thank you, Kim. 8888-ASK-LEO, you'll be speaking to Kim. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Leo. This is Steve.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Long time listener.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I've been doing this a long time. Very
you
long
have,
time.
You have.
Yeah. What's up? What can I do for you?
I'm in the process of eliminating all my hard copies, everything from financial documents and not maybe eliminating them, but backing them up to my hard drive on my computer.
Yeah. That's always been the promise of technology, the paperless office and all that.
Exactly. And I bought a high-speed scanner, and it's working great. And but now it dawned on me that if my computer grew legs and walked off, that I might be,
Well, first thing, all operating systems offer full disk encryption, and I always encourage people to turn that on. The day you get the computer, it's a good idea to turn that on. If you're on a Mac, they call it File Vault. On Windows, they call it BitLocker. Actually, I'm thinking Windows Pro has it. I guess that's real. What version of Windows are you using?
I do have Windows Pro.
Okay. Yeah, I think Microsoft really wants everybody to be using Windows Pro. There's this new Windows 10S, which is weird. But if you're using Windows Pro, you have BitLocker, and that's a full disk encryption. What happens is the disk is encrypted. If it should walk off, the bad guys wouldn't be able to read it. It's encrypted, but it, from your point of view, it doesn't seem like it's encrypted because it unencrypts the minute you log into your Windows account. So it reads and writes in full speed and so forth, and as long as the bad guys can't log into your Windows account, they can't read your data. I think that's a very good technique. Don't lose your password. Actually, the way BitLocker works is with something called certificates. And when you first do it, it'll offer a chance for you to back up those certificates. Same thing on the Mac. You'll have a chance to have some unlock, special unlock code. Do take advantage of that and back that data up somewhere else because, if you forget your password or you forget your login or something goes wrong, you'll lose your data. You also want, a good backup, and I'll tell you why. As soon as you're using full disk encryption on any system, it's impossible. It's really hard to recover data if it's lost. You've basically you're turning the disk into kind of some invisible, storage unit, and so disk recovery stuff tends to fail. So it's really important that you have good backups. In fact, I would, if you're going to do this, strongly follow the 3-2-1 backup motto, which is three copies, original plus two backups, not one, but two. Two different, media, two different kinds of storage. That's the two. And the one is one off-site. And this becomes more important once you start using your computer to store all your valuable stuff. So I highly recommend 3-2-1 backup. Make sure, though, that the backup system you're using is encrypted itself, right? Because now, especially the online one, now you're putting it in the cloud. You're in a way exposing it. If you really feel unsafe about that, and I wouldn't blame you for that, there are ways to do a local backup that has the same virtue, has an offsite component. Here's one way you could do that. Get a network-attached storage device in your home that is encrypted and backs up your data from your computer. So when you're logged in, it'll back up to this device, which will use its own encryption separate from BitLocker to encrypt the device. And then have a duplicate network-attached storage at work or off-site somewhere, at your mom's, wherever, your kids, somewhere else. And our Synology is the one I use, will do this, will back up to this external one. So you have cloud backup, you have off-site backup. It's just all within a trusted realm, your own. So if you're really serious about security, I think that that's, now it's not a cheap solution. The Synology NASs are fairly expensive. You have to populate them with disks, get a second one that you keep. And then the Synology sets it up so that they keep in sync. So the one at work is exactly the same as the one at home. Both are encrypted. The traffic over the internet is encrypted, so it's, you know, it's safe. And that way you have three copies, all encrypted, and one of them is off-site where if there were a fire in your house, for instance, everything would be safe. I don't have I trust cloud services, but it's probably a good thing to understand that the way most cloud services work, Dropbox, iCloud, OneDrive, Google Drive, all of these very common cloud services, in general, they offer encryption in place on the service. You know, they say, oh, no, don't worry, your data is safe. What they don't really tell you is, except that we have the key. So Apple's iCloud, which everybody respects Apple and says Apple's the privacy king, right? But what Apple doesn't tell you is they have the key to your data on iCloud. So it's encrypted. Nobody outside of Apple can read it, but a rogue employee at Apple could presumably read it. That's unlikely because they really do try to secure those keys. Only a few people have access to them. Maybe more to the point, they will respond to a federal or a law enforcement subpoena, not just federal, local as well, demanding that data. And they can provide law enforcement with that iCloud data. And that's true of OneDrive. That's true of Google Drive. Dropbox, all of them can offer your private, secured, encrypted data, unencrypted to law enforcement. So just, it's something to be aware of. Most people will say, well, I'm not in trouble with the law. I'm not worried about that. I trust our government. And if that's the case, then it's, you know, it's adequate. I pretty much store everything on the cloud and locally. Because it's more important to me that I don't lose my data. And if somebody wants to snoop through my stuff, go at it, have at it. I got nothing to hide. But it's important to understand that trade-off. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. It's funny. I went out and got, I think it was called Neat Receipts. I got one of these scanners. It's to scan all your documents. And then I realized, you know, it was a pain. I didn't do it. And just over time, I have less and less paper. Almost everything now is digital anyway. I don't have to scan stuff anymore. 888-827-5536. Our website, techguylabs.com. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up next.
Can I get Paco to pin it?
That there fine singing voice belongs to Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. When you filled in for me while I was on vacation, did you do a lot of that singing?
No, I didn't. He didn't even play this song at the bottom of the hour.
You should have made that your theme. Scott is the editor-in-chief at avsforum.com, where he does a great job writing about home theater. And he, of course, hosts our Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv. That's twit.tv/HTG for the true home theater enthusiast. We were talking before the... Before we went back on the air about my project of yesterday, the kids went to the fair, and by kids I mean my wife, went to the fair. Went to the fair, and so I had an afternoon free. So I pulled the credenza out in the living room and rewired everything. Because, you know, after a while, it gets not just dirty and dusty, but there's a lot of extra. It's a spaghetti factory back there.
It's a techno spaghetti factory. And particularly if you swap out equipment and maybe you don't need this cable, but instead of trying to pull it out from the techno spaghetti, you just leave it there.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. So I and found
it
I found
builds
three
up or, over time.
Oh, yeah, I had three or four extra Ethernet cables that went nowhere. A power supply. I don't even know what it belongs to.
Yeah.
A lot of extra stuff. I pulled it out, and it was much cleaner. Put everything on a surge suppressed power supply that, and now I can push the credenza. I couldn't. It was so bad back there. I couldn't push the credenza all the way back, which means the cats could get behind there.
Oh, man.
And that's really. I think I was having issues. So now I can push it back far enough the cats can't get back there. I think it'll be all right for a while. And the other thing I was a little worried about is fire.
When you get a lot of dust buildup in where there's a bunch of things plugged in, that could be a serious concern.
This is probably a good idea to do this every year or so.
I agree with you. I recently did it myself. And for me, it's even worse because I swap equipment in and out all the time.
Right.
And so I try to use, audio cables or even power cables are pretty standardized now. You have these what are called IEC power cables that have a standard shape to them. And so most equipment uses that. So I don't even use the power cable that comes with a piece of equipment. I just use the one that's already back there plugged in.
You know what I really like? Banana plugs.
Oh, those are so great. Audiophiles sometimes don't like them because they feel that maybe the connection isn't really good. And in many cases, it's not. They're right. So you found some special ones, some good ones.
Yeah, well, and I wish I could remember the name because I can't. This isn't really a recommendation because I can't remember the name. But I buy banana plugs. So remember in the old days of your
back in the old
when you were in college with your stereo system, you'd have a wire and you'd just strip the plastic off it, and then you'd put there'd be a terminal on the back of your receiver, and you'd connect it. And
you either wrap it around a terminal or you stick it
and
through
screw
a hole
it down. But I don't know when banana plugs arrive, but these are just little plugs that you can do the same thing with, but they're not on the receiver. They're separate, and it turns that wire – actually really neatens up the wire into a plug. And then some, I guess, more modern receivers – not all, but the higher-end receivers – have connections that you just plug into.
Makes almost every receiver does now.
Yeah.
It's almost ubiquitous.
It makes it very easy to swap wires and stuff. And I suppose if you didn't get – make sure you get a good connection, but – And good banana plugs are going to be electrically going to be good. So I would guess it's better than – I kept, losing a channel because the cats would pull out a cable and I'd
– Well, they'll do that here too. In fact, banana plugs might even be a little easier to pull out because with a bare wire, you typically wrap it around a post and then screw it down and it's really locked in there.
Yeah.
The banana plug, you can pull it out. But if the banana plug is slightly larger – that's another thing about banana plugs is that – they look like a banana. That's what they're called. That's why they're called that. But they're not curved.
Right.
But they kind of look a little bit like a banana, and they can actually compress. And so the point is to put them in the hole where they're supposed to go, and the hole is slightly smaller than the maximum diameter of the plug, and so it kind of squeezes the metal in a little bit.
Yeah, these are pretty good. They're fairly well connected in there, I think.
Yeah. Exactly. So I like them. I think they're great. They're much more convenient, and they make things much neater.
I confess I've kind of given up on being an audiophile. when I hit 60, big 60, I realized, I'm not hearing anything. This isn't going to make much of a difference. So I still love music.
Of course.
I wish people listened to more music instead of having it to be, kind of background
in the background
sauce. I frankly don't think I would notice the difference with or without banana plugs, and they sure are convenient.
Now
I did also go back there and I brought,
by the way, those are for speaker cables.
We should say that. Yeah, speaker cables. I did also go back there with my Brother label printer. I went in
and you labeled all the cables.
I labeled
the
cables.
Man, you are my hero.
And my headlamp, because it's dark back there.
You're mining.
Mining lamp. It really, it's probably while I waited till the family was out of the house, because it really probably looked goofy.
Looked pretty dorky, yeah.
And then I also brought my cable ties. You know, those plastic zip ties.
Oh, yeah.
And I decided not to do that because I realized it really makes it hard to reconfigure. You do that if you know you're never going to change anything.
That's the point. I made that mistake. When I first put up my home theater, I cable tied everything, and everything was all nice and neat and what we call cable. The cables were all dressed very carefully. Yes.
And I see people do that, like back in the rack here at the studio.
Yeah, everything's probably all dressed beautifully.
Oh, it's beautiful because
and it's a thing of beauty, as you say, to look at. But if you reconfigure, if you buy a new piece of equipment that maybe requires some different cabling or so on, then you've got to take off the cable ties and so on.
It's a big project. Yeah,
it's a big project. So, and particularly for me, because I swap things in and out all the time, I quickly found that the cable ties were more of a hindrance than a help. So I don't do that anymore.
So the banana plugs, I found them on Amazon. I was just looking at my Amazon.
Cool.
They're called Deadbolt Banana Plugs.
Oh, wow.
By Sewell, S-E-W-E-L Direct. Uh-huh. And I really like them. They're 24 karat gold plating. Mm-hmm. So ideally, the idea is to kind of make sure that the connection's good. They have, a very good technology for locking the wire in so it doesn't pull out.
Even better, especially with cats in the house. And I don't have any cats, so I don't have to worry about that.
You know what's worse than cats? Rabbits. Cats? No, I'll tell you why. Cats will unplug stuff. Rabbits will actually eat the wires.
Oh, man.
We used to have a bunny that we let wander around until it almost... I was afraid it was going to zap itself. So, yeah. Anyway, these banana plugs were very nice.
They look pretty good, and they have the wide part looks pretty wide, so it would crimp down very nicely when it goes into the to the socket.
I think these are better than the ones I tried before. They're not cheap for 12 pairs. You need 24 for 12 cables. It's $22 on Amazon. Deadbolt banana plugs, Sewell Direct.
But so about a buck a piece, roughly.
Yeah, but that's worth it. It sure made it easier to wire everything up. So I don't know. I was just proud of myself. I was thinking this is a good idea because of the dust and the loose wires. I don't want a fire back there.
Well, and dust is fairly flammable. So I would say you're exactly right. I would suggest going in like once a year maybe and just... when I went back recently behind my cabinet or my equipment rack, man, the dust was just like that. It was horrible. So I took a dust buster to it and was pretty careful about it because you're right. With a power cable, connector back there, something might spark and then you're, where you are.
Vacuum, clean up, tidy up. And if you still want cable ties but you want less permanent ones, they do make, and I actually own some of these, Velcro cable ties.
Oh, those are good. Yeah. I agree.
And those are easy to remove and move stuff around.
Yeah, it's the plastic ones that are
zip ties. You do not
zip ties. Yeah.
Well, we've used up your entire segment on my
that's fine. On
my spring cleaning.
But you're not the only one.
No, and it is probably a good idea to do this just for safety, if nothing else. Yep. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's a good point. Separate the power and the signal cables.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Who said that? Somebody in the chat room.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room, because then you don't get that hum. So what are we going to do here? We're going to switch to analog because we're still getting the dropout. So it must be their Zephyr then, if he's having it with other.
So they're going to Michael's going to send an email out to engineers. Okay. And have them check the
lines. Okay. Good.
But for now,
we're going to analog. We are now analog, ladies and gentlemen. Can you still hear me, Michael? Yep. All right. Analog's always better.
Oh, ye of the digital universe.
Yeah. All yours, Scott. I'll put up the timer here.
Thank you very much. Oh, good. Be sure to put up that timer. Do I get an echo? Let's see. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Don't worry about that echo. That was just from the talkback.
Well, Dr. Mom wanted to know what I thought of Book of Mormon, and somebody asked me that in the chat room after my podcast on Thursday as well, because I saw it last weekend. And I will start with what I really liked, and I loved the music. The music itself is great, really well written. The performances that I saw in L.A., it's the traveling company, and so I think most of the cast is part of the traveling company. One of them was actually in the original Broadway show. Their performances were phenomenal, just beautiful. Singing, the dancing, the choreography, all excellent. The show itself was a little too raunchy for me. Now, it's the South Park guys, and I was warned that it's the South Park guys, and they're going to be raunchy. But Dr. Mom, you said no bathroom humor, which is not entirely true, because there's a whole song about dysentery and diarrhea. And then there's the line that ends the first half and the second half, the entire show. Both halves are end with the same line, the very last line. I'm not sure if I should say it, but it's...
Yeah, don't say it. You don't need to say
it. It's really funky.
When you said you were going to go, I didn't say anything. Lisa and I saw it in San Francisco, and I have to, again, you know, seeing it in Broadway is probably a different matter.
But it's the same content.
It wasn't so much that it was raunchy. We just kind of baffled that it received such high praise. We were not so...
I have to say I was, too. I mean, there were philosophical things about, you know, white Mormons going to Africa. And,
which I agree with. I mean, Trey Parker's very political.
Yeah, he is very political.
Which I don't have a problem with.
I don't either. That's true.
But I just didn't find it that compelling of a show. But I didn't want to say that because I know people love it. And I have to tell you,
I got my tickets given to me, so I didn't pay for it. So that was a good thing, and they were fantastic seats. Thanks to Eileen Sondheim for giving me the tickets. She and her partner couldn't use them. But I have to say, I was not very pleased or impressed with the movie, the musical. And neither was my seatmate, my friend Nina. My wife couldn't go, so I asked my friend Nina if she wanted to go, and she said, "Yeah, she's a musician too, a piano player and a singer." So she actually wanted to go. She had thought about getting tickets because, again, everybody thought it was great.
Yeah.
But I was not very pleased.
Yeah. Chumley's saying he preferred Steve Martin's Meteor Shower, which is a very funny show. And Chumley, you'll be glad to know, Steve told me it's opening on Broadway in November.
Oh, wow. Steve Martin show. I'll go to that.
It's very funny.
What's it called?
Meteor Shower.
Oh, man. And I hope it comes to L.A.
It was in San Diego. That's where we saw it. And then I think it went to the Long Wharf in New Haven, and now it's going to Broadway. And wait, can you stay for the top?
Sure can.
I'm so in love. Oh, there I go singing. Scott's catching. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Ed is in Lyle, Illinois. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, let me take it off the speaker.
Sure. Am I saying it right? Is it Lyle?
Lyle, that's it.
All right. There's an S in there, but we won't mention that.
There, I got it off the speaker.
Thank you. What can I do for you, Ed?
Got a problem. I'm transferring three domains from Bluehost to GoDaddy.
Okay.
Bluehost jacked their prices out of sight, and these are websites I don't make a nickel off of. I couldn't afford to pay their extortion.
Okay, fair enough.
GoDaddy was $37 and some odd cents compared to over $200 for Bluehost.
Wow.
But anyway, in transferring, there's one. I tried to change everything to do a transfer, but under technical contacts, it has email, whatis@bluehost.com, which is, there's no such thing, I don't think.
Okay.
Now, when you go do a transfer, they will send a thing, if the transfer is okay, to make sure that somebody's not messing around with you.
Right.
But they won't use my regular email.
They'll only use the technical email.
Yeah, and I can't change it. I've changed everything else. Except the technical one.
So did you register the domain at Bluehost, I guess?
Yeah.
Because that's part of the domain name record, not part of the hosting record. It may be that Bluehost, some domain registrars will offer privacy because...
That's been disabled.
That's been disabled. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's now a call to Bluehost saying, I want my domain name back. And you're not, so you're transferring your web hosting, but you might as well also transfer the domain name to GoDaddy. They're also a registrar.
I'm transferring everything.
Yeah. You can, you know, these are decoupled, technically. You can have a domain name anywhere and a web hosting anywhere. They don't have to go together. They often are sold together, but that's not a necessity. And I generally like to, I have a domain registrar that I use. I have many different sites on many different hosting services, but I have one domain registrar to keep all my domain names together. So, and it could be GoDaddy. That's really GoDaddy's real business is domain registration. So, but you need, yeah, and you can also enlist GoDaddy's help here, probably, because you're right. They need, you know, they want, and this is reasonable. They don't want some third party to come along and steal your domain names. So they have a reasonable, make sure you're not locked either. That's another thing that will be in the
book. No, it's unlocked.
Okay, unlocked, privacy is off. And you can't change the technical email address in your Bluehost dashboard?
No, it won't change. There's no way to change it.
Okay. So then you will need to, you have two choices. Because you're moving to GoDaddy, they have an incentive. You might call GoDaddy and have them do this. Somebody needs to contact Bluehost and say, hey, dude, I need the technical email to point to me, to my email, so I can move it. I'm not sure why they do it. I'm not familiar with Bluehost's business practices, but
they're just trying to hold me up for a couple $100 is what it is.
Well, I don't know if that's the case. The technical email address probably should point to Bluehost since they're the ones hosting the domain. Generally, I have both technical and administrative. I presume your administrative email address is your email address. And I'm surprised that GoDaddy won't use the administrative email, that it requires the technical email. It's not, so every domain name registration has an address associated with it and an email address associated with it for both the administrative, the person who owns it, the business behind it, and the technical administrator. And the technical person, frankly, probably should be Bluehost. They're the ones administering the server. And so any issues with the server or the domain should probably go directly to them, not you. I would first check with GoDaddy to see if they'll use the administrative address, because that's presumably yours. And if not, then you've got to call Bluehost and say, I need both email addresses to point to me, not to you. They shouldn't, I don't think they should do that. But I understand why they might. And then if you can't get satisfaction using both, you know, not just calling Bluehost, but using GoDaddy, then go to ICANN. They're the ones who run this whole thing. Both Bluehost and GoDaddy, as domain registrars, are beholden to the central authority, ICANN.org. And you can make a complaint about Bluehost if you feel like they're acting predatorily. We'll put a link. Jumper has posted the link in the show in the chat room, and I'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Bluehost and GoDaddy both have to work according to ICANN's rules. So if they are doing something to hold you up, both, by the way, GoDaddy does this too. A lot of registrars do this. They make it hard to move a domain. And they'll say, well, we make it hard because we don't want somebody stealing your domain. That's a big problem out there is domain squatters and so forth. I wanted to move a domain off GoDaddy, and because I changed some technical contact information, they said you can't move it for 6 months. Wink, wink. Now, I don't believe that was for security. I believe that was to lock in their profit. So I don't think that's right. But there are rules, and they have to adhere to those rules. Very good. Art Chandra in our chat room says, ICANN stands for the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. And that's exactly right. It's a non-governmental organization that runs the domain name system. And that's what you're a part of with your web names. It's interesting that they're pointing to their domain name. There should be a way to change that. Or maybe there's a process at Bluehost to transfer a domain name. And again, remember, domain name is decoupled from the actual website. They're two separate things. Moving on to Eric in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hello, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello.
That's me.
That's you.
Hello, Leo. Let me get you off speaker.
All right.
I have a question about, I have a friend that is a, well, let's say, to be politically correct, he's challenged mentally, and he likes CDs, but I want to burn those CDs for him, and I want to keep track of them, and I would like to know if there's a program that you can get that will look at the file extension M3U. That's MICA 3 uniform.
Yeah, that's a MP3 playlist. That's what an M3U is a playlist of a list of MP3s.
Yeah. Well, Media Monkey, it does it in FLAC.
Yeah, or whatever. So you're ripping the CDs. That's good. You're ripping them in a lossless compression. It saves space, about 50% less space, but doesn't lose any of the CD's original, which is great. In fact, you could even burn CDs from it that were duplicate to the originals. And Media Monkey should print it for you. You should be able to take the playlist that you've created and print it out with Media Monkey. That's actually that's the way I would have recommended, probably. The M3U is just the description for that list. But just look at that list in Media Monkey and then print. I think that would work. Well, hang on the line. We'll talk off the air if there's an additional issue. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So isn't there a print feature in Media Monkey?
Not that I've seen. You can go to file, and you know that's usually where you do it. But I have not seen a way that you can print those.
Yeah, you have to do the in Media Monkey. It's a little different. You have to create a report. So go to File, Create Report, not File, Print, and then you can create a report from that. And then that report is printable. So you're right. That isn't immediately clear how they're working that. But that does do the job. And now we return you to Scott Wilkinson. He's not a media monkey. He's a audio-visual monkey.
That's right.
Home theater guru.
Woohoo! So, yeah, there's been a discussion in the chat room about speaker wire gauge. You know, how thick do you need your speaker wires to be? I know plenty of audiophiles who use, you know, garden hose size speaker wire, and I really don't think that's necessary. Not as far as my ears are concerned, anyway. I think it was, who was it? C.O. Bra had bought some 18-gauge speaker wire, which is pretty thin. Now, the reason that gauge kind of matters up to a certain point in speaker wire is that speaker signals, speaker level signals have more current. They're just a stronger electrical current. So you need a little copper to carry that. And I think 18 gauge is too small. Oh, by the way, he's also going 15 feet, $600 receiver and 15 feet. And 15 feet is not long. So a smaller gauge would work. Another reason to use a bigger gauge is if you're going a long distance. But 15 feet's no problem. Still in all, most of what I've seen and read seems to indicate that 14 gauge is generally what I would recommend just to be comfortable and perfectly happy with the amount of copper that's going from the receiver to the speaker. 18 gauge, I think, is a little skimpy. Now, how much will it affect the sound? Not very much. It depends on whether you're a golden ears or not. If you are, then you're going to hear a big difference. Whether or not it's really there or not is another question, but that's another question. The generally speaking, though, I can't say, I don't know exactly what the difference would be. Probably, maybe, I don't know, I'm just guessing. I'll have to do some research on that, actually. This is a good question that I would like to know the answer to. If your speaker cable is too small, really, how will it affect the sound? Will it reduce the impact of the bass? Will it? I don't know. I have to look at it. That's a very good question. Anyway, the bottom line for me is I would get 14 gauge. Some people recommend 12 gauge. I think 14 gauge is fine. I think 18 gauge is a little too small. Tim Elliott's asking, I know people love analog, but isn't digital the only way to preserve first generation master tape for future generations? Well, yeah, it kind of is. Unless the original master tape was analog, which isn't very common these days, but it still does happen. Some artists prefer the sound of analog all the way to the tape. Now, of course, it's going to get digitized at some point to put on a CD, to put on a download site or a streaming site. That's all going to be digital, of course. But digital archiving is clearly much more reliable as long as you take those files and migrate them to the next generation of storage device. See, that's the problem. I'm sure Leo would agree. I've still got a jazz drive and a zip drive that are SCSI connections, and I'm never going to read those. I don't have a computer with a SCSI port. You have to keep migrating your data from one generation of storage medium to the next. As long as you do that, you can keep it forever, as long as you keep doing that. Whereas analog tape will degrade over time. Even if you store it perfectly, in the right humidity and the right temperature, with no strong light on it, you have to be very careful storing analog media. And if you do, it'll still degrade over time. I mean, we're looking at film stock, not talking about audio, but talking about film, that's been kept in the Warner Brothers vaults and Sony Pictures vaults and so on. And after 50 or 60 years, it still degrades. And you can't really make a copy of it, a backup copy, because every generation of copy of analog reduces the quality, increases the noise. So digital is clearly the way to go there. Eponi says that speaker wire does not affect the sound unless the wires are hanging on corroded threads. Well, yeah, you don't want corroded. But if it doesn't, I would be surprised if it made any significant difference to the sound. But I haven't done that experiment. It's a good experiment to do. Somebody in the chat room mentioned my colleague Mark Henninger and his experiment where he compared, I think it was Monster cables, speaker cables, to a crumpled up roll of aluminum foil, which he had to string around his apartment or his house. He's got a row house in Philly. He had to string it around because it wasn't insulated. It was just this, a roll of aluminum foil that he crumpled up into a quote unquote cable. And he had to hang it around the room and make sure that they didn't touch, the two leads didn't touch each other. But he couldn't hear much of a difference. He even measured them. And yes, the aluminum cable had more impedance. And I forget exactly what the curve was, but as the frequency went up, as I recall, so did the impedance, much more than the Monster cable. But in terms of listening, he, didn't necessarily hear much of a difference, as I recall. So go look at that on AVS Forum. That was a very interesting experiment, I thought. Rusty Bones, Voyager was sent out with a CD. No, it wasn't. It was sent out with an LP, wasn't it?
No, it was a metal disc.
Yeah, but it was an LP.
Yeah, it was analog, yeah.
It was analog.
That's a good question. Yeah, I would guess it was analog, yeah.
Yeah, and they included the instructions on how to build a playback device.
Right, right.
But it was analog. But it was on a gold record. LP.
Yeah.
You know? So that's not going to degrade over time. Gold, it's amazing that gold simply does not degrade over time. It's so inert. It's amazing, actually. And so, yeah, but it was an analog recording. So that's one way, I suppose, to archive analog recordings is to make a gold disc. But come on, the frequency response of an LP, even a gold LP, isn't going to approach anywhere near what digital can do.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Have a great week.
Yes, thank you. And I'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. Phone number 888-827-5536. 888-ASK-LEO. Same thing. Easy to remember that way, right? You can call in. You'll be speaking to Kim Schaffer. She'll help you get on the air, comb your hair, you know, do a little powdering on your nose if it's shiny so you can make your debut. No, it's radio. You don't have to do any of that. Frankly, you don't even have to put on pants. 888-ASK-LEO. I just don't want to know if you're not wearing them. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. And I put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Media Monkey is our last caller said, well, I'm making these, ripping CDs for a friend, and I want to print out a playlist of what's on the, the discs or what's on the rips. And he's using Media Monkey, which is a great choice on Windows, highly recommended. And but it's a little it's so powerful. This is often a trade-off that there is in fact no file print command. You have to create a report. So you go to file, create report, and I'm putting a link in the show notes to a script for Media Monkey that lets you do custom reports with any fields, any headers you want, and all of that. Once you create the report, then there's a print command from the report. It's just an example of a program being so powerful and flexible that it's not obvious how to do a straightforward, simple task. That's not unusual. That's just kind of how it is. And in a way, I'm glad because that's why I have a job. If it were easy, you wouldn't need me. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Rob in Vacaville's next. Hi, Rob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
You're on the air. You're on the radio. Hello.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I'm on the radio, Ma. What can I do for you?
Okay. I'm looking to replace my 5K iMac with a Windows desktop.
Oh, Apple's going, oh, how could he do such a thing? Yeah, they did announce. No. And although I have to say I love the 5K iMac.
I love the hardware.
Yeah. A lot of people are looking at Windows as an opportunity, mostly because of hardware and mostly on laptops. I think Apple's 5K is pretty impressive. But if you want a very flexible, upgradable piece of hardware, Apple may not be the place to go. And if you want a laptop with more connectors, more choices, then you may be moving to Windows. The good news is most of the stuff we do these days is the same on Mac or PC, because it's a lot of it's just browsing. And if you're a photographer, for instance, Adobe's programs are exactly the same on either platform. So a lot of people are moving to Windows just because they have more hardware choices. What don't you like about the software?
I hate the Mac OS Finder. I like the Windows File Explorer much better.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's fair.
And I do. I've got lots of photographs, and I've got I'm obsessive compulsive, so I'm always playing with the folder structures and stuff. And the
first thing I should point out is that you can run Windows on that iMac very nicely. You might be Walt Mossberg used to say at the Wall Street Journal, the best Windows machine is a Mac. Apple has a couple of ways that you can do this. Actually, Apple has one way, and then there are third-party solutions that are another way. The Apple solution is called Oh, now it's escaped my mind. Boot something. What is it called? Chat room, help me.
Boot camp.
There you go. Here we are, middle of summer. I should have remembered camp. Boot camp. And it lets you take your hard drive and take part of it and run, make it turn into a Windows hard drive. It will create then a disk with the drivers, because Apple has to provide the drivers because it's Apple hardware. And then all you need is a copy of Windows. You do need to buy a copy of Windows. It's not that expensive, though, these days. So Boot Camp will let you basically make a dual boot, what we call a dual boot system, a Macintosh that can boot to Windows or Mac, depending on your mood. You can also run Windows in emulation. That's the other way to do it. Companies like VMware with VMware Fusion and Parallels will let you run Windows inside the Mac interface. But it sounds to me like you really just want to run Windows, in which case Boot Camp is your friend. My old Mac Pro, my son uses, and he's a gamer, and of course he prefers Windows, so he's running Windows on the Mac Pro, and it runs beautifully.
If I ran Boot Camp, would I have access to the entire file structure on the hard drive?
No. Well, wait a minute. You mean like the Mac stuff?
Well, the data files.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let me think about that. Yeah. You don't see the Mac partition in Windows because Windows can't see an HFS partition. But if you, say, took the files that you wanted and you put them on a third compatible partition, you know, in other words, divided your hard drive into thirds or had an external hard drive with your data on it and made sure that the data drive was formatted with FAT or XFAT or NTFS, something that Windows could see, then you actually, I would recommend FAT because that way Mac and Windows can both read it and it'd be a shared disk. And yes, then it'd be visible to Windows. That's a limitation of Windows. It just can't read the Mac file system.
Yeah. I'm going to consider that, but I'd like to ask you about if I do replace it with a Windows desktop, would you recommend something like the Surface Studio?
Yeah.
An old-fashioned tower with a nice 4K display?
Well, I use a Surface Studio. It's pricey. It starts at $3,000, and it's not super powerful. But it is like the iMac, an all-in-one. That means the screen and the computer are part and parcel. And it does something that I wish an iMac did, which is the screen can be laid down to 17 degrees, I think it is. So it's like a drafting table. And then it has touch, which the Apple doesn't have either. And touch is very nice on a Surface Studio. You get a pen and you can draw. If you do any of that, I think you'll really like it. There certainly are, you know, there are even 5K screens, but you'd need to get pretty powerful hardware to drive 5K on a PC. You're probably going to be using a 4K screen in all likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
The Surface Studio, though, is great. It's a 3000 by 2000. It's a 3x2 screen. My problem is it is very expensive for not a super powerful machine. We ended up replacing the spinning hard drives with SSDs. That made it pretty speed it up considerably. But I think what Microsoft's done with this is they've effectively, the hardware is a laptop, is laptop hardware. You're really paying for this screen. And the screen is fantastic. I couldn't recommend it more highly. And if you think you want touch, that's the only way to go because Apple doesn't do touch.
Well, I think I want something powerful enough to do Lightroom, Photoshop, stuff like that.
Yeah, I could do Lightroom. One of the problems I've had with Lightroom, both on Mac and PC, is as you get bigger and bigger cameras, you know, you get to 30 megapixels on your shots, Lightroom starts to get bogged down quite a bit. It's hard to move from shot to shot because Lightroom has to render it. Even on the Mac and the PC, I had the same problem on the Surface Studio. On the other hand, Lightroom on a Surface Studio, if you put it in touch mode, is a thing to behold, a thing of beauty. And Photoshop is better with pen, too. So I don't think that would be a bad choice, but I would say don't get the base unit, you know. And I frankly wish Microsoft would offer just that display, and then I could put a PC of my choice on it. There are plenty of good displays in the PC world. You just need to make sure you have a powerful enough video card to drive it. Chumley's saying a GTX 1080 will drive a 6K display on a PC. And I have to say, I love the Surface Studio. every time I show somebody, they just, their eyes bug out, especially Mac users. So I do recommend it highly, but get enough juice so that you don't feel like you're in an underpowered device. And that means you're spending a lot of money. But you own a Mac. You already spend a lot of money. 8888 Ask Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's funny because I don't even have a Mac laptop at home anymore. Not that I lost it, because I don't lose things anymore. I have the Tracker. I love my Tracker. Do you know about the Tracker? The Tracker is the best Bluetooth tracking device. This is the new Tracker Pixel. So it's about the size of a quarter, but it weighs less. It's anodized aluminum. The new Tracker Pixel, here I'll show you, is awesome. It has LEDs on it all the way around the ring. So here's the idea. This is a Bluetooth LE device, okay, very tiny, very light. You pair it to your phone, the Tracker app on your phone. And then whenever you get out of touch with your Tracker, your phone will say, hey, this is where I saw it last. But it works the other way, too. You can configure two-way separation so that if you leave your phone behind, your Tracker will make a noise. And if you press this button on the Tracker, your phone makes noise, which is awesome. And look, the LEDs light up. That means if you put this on, let's say I would put this on my remote or your keys, and then it could fall down under a table or something, the light really helps you find them. You know, if you've ever lost your keys, you know they show up in the weirdest places. That's because, well, they're lost. If they were somewhere obvious, you wouldn't have lost them. They're in a hamper or under a couch or, I don't know, in a peanut butter jar. I don't know. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first Tracker device, and they keep getting better and better. The new Tracker Pixel is a really clever idea. This is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. I'm going to put this on my keys. I have a Tracker on my keys. Actually, I have a Tracker like on my keys attached by a fob to my briefcase, so that way it kind of does double duty. But now I can just put this on the keys separately. When I misplace an item, I can find it on the Tracker. Tracker also has the world's largest crowd locate network, which means anybody, let's say somebody picks up my keys and takes them to Timbuktu, anybody who walks by my keys with the Tracker software on their phone will see my Tracker device and ping my phone and say, hey, your keys, just saw them in Timbuktu. It's like you have 4.5 million buddies out there looking out for you. 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you've got nothing to lose, I want you to try it right now. We're going to get you 20% off any order at thetracker.com. Thetracker. Missing that second E. Thetracker.com. But you have to use the promo code TECHGUY if you want to get 20% off. And by the way, notice how long these LEDs blink. That's really a nice feature. I hate it. So, when you're searching for your phone and it makes a noise once, it's like, that's not useful. Keep making a noise till I find it. Well, now I don't have to worry about it. I've got the Tracker. Let me put that on my keys right now. That's great. Thetracker.com. Promo code TECHGUY. Where are my keys? Where are my keys, if you please? See, I have the Tracker Bravo on there. This is even smaller. Look at that. But I think what I'm going to do is put it on this keychain because I often detach it. So let me put it on this. And then that way I'm double protected. Look how little that is. Isn't that awesome? And, of course, this is chained to my briefcase, so I'm doubly protected. TheTracker.com, promo code Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 88 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go back to the phones on this 4th of July weekend. Carlos in San Berdu. Hello, Carlos.
Hey there, Leo.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm very well. I'm happy.
Good.
Happy go lucky. Yeah.
Peaches and cream, happy.
Peaches and cream.
I have a Samsung LG G6, I believe it is.
Oh, good. And that's nice. Yeah. It's not Samsung. It's LG, but that's okay. I won't.
LG.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, there's no Samsung in there. It's all LG.
But I have a Samsung plasma TV.
Oh.
An older TV that's about 15 years old. And I was wondering, should I, how can I go about viewing what I have on my phone on plasma TV?
Yeah. So that plasma TV doesn't have the new, you know, technologies, the DLNA that will allow you to send it straight from the phone. However, it's easy to add with something called a Chromecast. Google sells these for as little as $35 on a newer TV. You want a Chromecast Plus that's 4K, but you're just a 1080p, just a high-def screen. So you can get the regular Chromecast for $35. It plugs into your HDMI port on your TV. And then you put the Google, they used to call it the Chromecast app. Now I think it's just called the Google Home app. And it means that you can, in many apps on your LG phone, for instance, you fire up Netflix or YouTube or Amazon. There's once you have a Chromecast installed, the phone knows it, and it will put a little icon up on the menu bar at the top that says, "While you're, let's say you're watching Orange Is the New Black," you press play, and then you pick the Chromecast icon and you say, "Send this to my TV," and the TV will start playing it. It is great. Highly recommend it. Actually, Target's got them for $30. They're on sale right now. Thanks, CaboZone. I'm very, very happy with Chromecast. It's a really nice technology.
I'm using everything via Wi-Fi. Now, for the most part, that TV is just connected to my cable.
This is the beauty part about the Chromecast. It becomes the Wi-Fi. It adds Wi-Fi to your TV. So your TV doesn't have to have an internet connection. You just have to have Wi-Fi in the house. And it's a little different from what you described because it's not taking the contents of the phone and displaying it on the TV. It can do that in some browsers, but it's what it's really doing is a handoff. So you start. Let's use Netflix as an example, but there are many, many apps that are Chromecast enabled. So you're in Netflix, you're playing a show, you send it to the Chromecast. What really happens is the phone connects to the Chromecast, says, Carlos wants to watch Orange is the New Black. So the Chromecast says, got it, I'll take over. It is connected to your Wi-Fi, and it starts streaming, not your phone. Your phone still has the capability of pausing, rewinding, turning the volume up and down, all of that still works. But you could turn your phone off, put it away, and the show would still play on the TV because the Chromecast dongle itself is the one receiving the Wi-Fi. So that's in a way, you know, your TV's old enough it doesn't have Wi-Fi. But in a way, that's what these devices like Roku, Apple TV, Chromecast do is they connect to your TV via HDMI. You do have to have an HDMI port. That's not even strictly true. It is for Chromecast, but some of the older Rokus you can connect in other ways. But the idea is these devices have Wi-Fi, so they'll get the content and put it into the TV via the HDMI port. In effect, it's enabling Wi-Fi on your TV. I think for $30, that's the sale price at Target. You can get it online from Google, store.google.com for $35. The Chromecast is a must-have. Most TVs, it's just a... And now, by the way, a lot of companies are building TVs with Chromecast built in, which really simplifies this. You don't have to buy anything extra. We just got a Vizio that I just cast from the phone right to the TV. There are other technologies. Microsoft has one, what do they call it? I can't remember what Microsoft calls it. Apple calls it AirPlay. They're all based on a open technology called DLNA. There's Wi-Fi Direct from Intel. There's a whole bunch of ways to cast stuff up to your TV. But I actually like how the Chromecast works. The only negative on the Chromecast is not every app on your phone is Chromecast enabled. But almost all the apps that will play television shows or Miracast, that's the Microsoft technology. Thank you, Twisted Mister. Miracast. And why they're not Intel created wireless distribution, which begs to be called WiDi, but I asked them and they said, no, please don't call it that. Wireless distribution. And all of these, the reason I like Chromecast so much, none of these other solutions work very well. If you've ever tried to use Miracast or YDI or DLNA to stream to your TV, you realize it's hit and miss. Chromecast works so much better. I would guess it's based on similar technologies. But because it's kind of a closed loop, you know, you plug the Chromecast device into your TV and then your phone talks to it. It's Google controls a little more tightly. Dave, Paris, California. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah. Hey, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, good, because I'm in my car. I'm running some errands.
Okay.
I have a quick question. I'm trying to compensate for my terrible internet service by putting a video card in my computer, and I'm wondering if that's going to be very beneficial.
Well, you're going to connect the video card to what, your cable box or antenna?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I go online and I go into things, say, like Google Hangouts and live internet chats.
Oh, I see. And you want a video out, not video in.
Well, I'm trying to take care of my lag time that I have, because sometimes I get screen freezing.
Yeah, putting a video capture card in your computer will not help that at all. Nor will improving your GPU. None of that will make a difference.
No.
You're exactly right. That's down to your internet connection speed, and that's the weak link, and nothing can make that better. And truthfully, your GPU doesn't get involved anyway, as far as I know. Almost all PCs just blast the video that they're getting right up onto the screen. They don't process it through a video card. So I understand what you're thinking. On video games, it makes it faster if you have a faster video card, right? The frame rate improves, the video improves. That's because the computer is actually drawing the screen in real time, and the fast video card makes it draw faster. The TV or Hangouts or Skype or any of that stuff, that's not what's going on. It's getting a picture which is rendering up on the display, and it's not using the GPU particularly to do that. Really, your problem? Slow internet. There's no way to fix that. Sorry. 888. Now go do your errands. 8888. Ask Leo. I know you're doing your errands while you listen. That's why we have the website where we put all the links and all the things I say, so you don't have to write anything down. It's all at techguylabs.com, and it's free. There's no sign up. It's there for you. Techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the phone number, 8888 Ask Leo. From Lodi, Cheryl's next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
I have a question about, and I have an elderly mother who lives alone, and it does relatively okay, but we're starting to just be concerned about being able to check on her, and I'm looking for some kind of an indoor camera system that we could check, just dial in or call up or whatever you want to call it, and see what's going on at the house.
There are loads of these. Loads of them.
Recommendation.
I have been using, and I really like it, the Nest. Hello, T-Mobile. the Nest IQ. Do you want to get that? Or
no, that's okay.
Okay. I mean, it would be okay. We could listen in on your call, but no. So there are a lot of them. This is not a particularly cheap one, but it has some advantages. I've always liked the Nest cams, even back before they were purchased by Nest. Nest is a division of Google, and they were called the Drop Cams. We use Drop Cams all over the studio, and they've just gotten better and better. This is their new indoor cam, the Nest IQ, and a couple of things that make it interesting. One is it learns people's faces. So when there's somebody in the house that it hasn't seen before, it can notify you. You can turn it on very easily and see what's going on. It does require Wi-Fi. Does mom have Wi-Fi?
Yes, okay. Finally.
Finally. I know. I set my mom up with Wi-Fi. And she, by the way, she's 84. Sorry, mom.
Mm-hmm.
And has an iPad and Wi-Fi, and we talk on FaceTime. And I just gave her an Amazon Echo. I'm just sending her the new show. She loves all of these toys because they connect her with her family, right? She doesn't get out of the house much, but she can now get connected. So I understand your desire to do this. The other thing I like about the IQ is it's a 4K camera. It's a very high-resolution camera. Now, it doesn't stream 4K. It only streams 1080p. You wouldn't want it to stream 4K. It would eat up all our bandwidth. But the beauty of that is it does face recognition. So if it sees her, it'll zoom in on her. And as she moves around, it will follow her.
Okay.
It also has a subscription feature, which I'm trying to remember. I think it's $10 a month, and I think $99 if you subscribe for a year. And what that does is it records 10 days at a time. And when there's movement, it will show you on the timeline, and you could jump right to it. So even if you're not watching mom right now at the moment, mm-hmm. you can see the last time she moved through the area. It's very wide angle. I was able to put it in our we have a kind of a great room with a kitchen just off of it. It was able to get almost 180 degrees. It could see all the way to the right in the kitchen, all the way to the left in the great room, and all the way to the front door. And I could zoom in on any part of that. So okay. Now it's not cheap. I think they're $239, something like that. They're very easy to set up because it's wireless. So you just plug it in. It needs to be near a plug. Oh, one more feature. You can hear mom. It has a microphone. And you can speak to mom. It has a speaker.
Okay.
So you can say, mom, are you okay?
Yeah, that's kind of what we're thinking. There's something when, you know, I call her, she doesn't answer.
Yep.
And as far as I know, she should be there.
Yep.
And I would be able to just take a quick look and see,
exactly.
Oh, she's taking a nap.
Exactly.
Or, you know, the
exactly.
bad thing, of course, oh, she's fallen and she's on the floor. I need
right.
to get help.
And you can see where there was movement last. If you see, you know, she seems to be on the floor, you can zoom down to that. I like these. Now, I took them out. My wife said, I do not want this camera in my living room. And I thought, you know what? You're right. Nobody else can see it. Now, we've seen cameras. There's other camera manufacturers who have not been as attentive to security as they ought to be. We've seen, for instance, the Foss Cam, which was a very popular camera. People could log into it. Google, though, I trust. Nest, I trust. They have a very good security track record. They keep these up to date. And that's one of the reasons you pay a little extra for these, I think, is you're getting great industrial design, great artificial intelligence, real good smarts, but also a guarantee. When you put something like this in a house, you want to make sure it's secure.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want somebody logging in to see what's going on. You want to make sure only you can.
Can multiple people log in?
Yes.
Okay.
So you put the Nest app on your phone, whatever, or you can do it on a website, the Nest mm-hmm. website. You log into it. They have two factors, so you can make it really secure, and it will also send you alerts on your phone when there's motion. So you can, you know, that's nice. You don't need to check in on mom because you see, oh, she's moving around.
Yeah. Okay.
This just came out. I literally got it a couple of days ago, but I really like it. It's the Nest IQ. It's their new. They have an older indoor camera, which is perfectly good, and that's a little bit less expensive. But I think you'll like the IQ because of the sound.
Okay. All right. Well, we're gearing up to get things set up.
Yeah.
So she can hopefully continue to live alone.
Good. So. And consider getting her an Echo. And you might want to get an Echo, too. And the reason is this new drop-in feature, which is basically an intercom. So you can say, drop in on mom, and it'll go bloop on her Echo. This is the Amazon Echo.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, mom, and she'll hear you. And it's a nice, clear sound. You could also get her, and this is what I got my mom, the new one that just came out, the Echo Show, which has a camera and a screen on it, and you can make video calls. My mom loves that. She loves being able to make video calls, and this makes it very easy.
Yeah, we're still trying to get her to go along with having a smartphone. She still has a flip phone.
Yeah, but this is, so this is,
half the time.
She might like the Echo. Look into it. Do you have an Echo at home?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you might. My mom loves it because she can say things like, listen to Elvis, and it'll start playing Elvis music.
Mm-hmm.
At first it's like, oh, this is, you know, a little too 21st century. But pretty soon the convenience of it is fantastic. And I think because she can control it with her voice, it's pretty friendly. I just thought I'd mention it.
Okay. Well, we will look into this.
Yeah. Yeah, the world is definitely coming to this kind of thing. I got a little paranoid, and I thought I don't want a high def camera on all the time. Oh, by the way, it has night vision, very good night vision. So even if the lights are out, I take it you'll put it in Mom's bedroom. Even if the lights are out, you can see if she's there and sleeping. My mom loves their Echo. Dr. Mom's saying her mom also loves her Echo. I think for older folks, some of this technology, I understand the reluctance, believe me. But that's because it's hard to use. If you think about a smartphone, that is challenging. You really have to learn a whole new paradigm for what these things. That's a pocket computer. The Echo, you just talk to it. You can have audiobooks on it. So my mom can say, read to me, literally, read to me, and it will read the book, pick it up where she left off and read it to her. It'll play music, get news. I think there's some really, I think for older folks, she loves her Echo. The other thing she likes about it is her grandson comes over more often because he wants to play with it. Mom, I haven't told you yet, but I'm sending you this new Echo show. And I think you're going to like it. We make FaceTime calls frequently. Well, as often as I call my mom, about once a week. But I think she'll like this ability. And I think the drop-in is very interesting. Drop-in is basically an intercom, but it doesn't have to be in the same house. So you can drop in on Mom. She has to accept, but you can talk to her, and she can talk back to you. And I think that's a really nice feature. And with the drop-in on the Echo show, which has a camera and a screen, you can see each other as well as hear each other. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls still to come. Johnny Jett, who would normally be here at this time, will be joining us tomorrow at this time to talk about technology and travel. Well, yeah, that's another thing. If you have an Apple Watch, the IQ will notify you on the watch. And you can even look at video on the watch, which is really wild. That's really crazy. Yeah, I had this one in my office, my den. And I had this one in the living room. So we had very good coverage because it's a very wide angle. But I completely understand why Lisa thought this was probably, she didn't, there's a little green dot on it. She didn't like these eyes looking at her. I don't blame her. I didn't either. So I was quick to unplug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536 on this Independence Day weekend. I will talk a little bit about the new Amazon Echoes. There's three new Echoes. Echo is that thing you talk to that was just a black cylinder in your home that the people who own them are crazy about, and the rest of the world just thinks they're crazy because it's a cylinder that you talk to, and you'll say things like, you know, Echo, what time is it? Echo, set a timer for 13 minutes for my French fries. You'll say, Echo, you know, give me my news briefing. You can play games with it. There's new skills. There's thousands, literally, I think more than 5,000 skills that third parties have taught the Echo. Amazon is doubling down on it. It's been out for a couple of years now. And by the way, facing competition from Google, from Microsoft, and Apple. All three have announced similar devices you talk to. Turns out that's a really nice, useful kind of interface, speech interface to this device. Amazon has announced, so they started with a cylinder, which was a couple hundred bucks. Then they announced this little thing called the Dot that only had a tiny little speaker, but you could connect it to bigger speakers. And I bought, those were cheap. They were 40 bucks. So I bought a number of Dots. I actually started, as most did, with an Echo in my kitchen, and it ended up having an Echo in the bedroom, an Echo in the living room, an Echo in the den. I mean, Echoes in every room because I got used to it. I wanted to be able to talk to it. Then Amazon announced, and they have only released one of the three, but they announced three new devices. The Echo Wand, that's for you scanning your groceries and adding it to a list. Actually, that's out now. The Echo Show just came out this week. A lot of people are getting that. That's an Echo with a built-in little 7-inch tablet that shows information all the time, like weather and news, and can and a camera and a speaker and a microphone, so you can make video calls to other Echo shows. And they're soon to come, the Echo Look, which is designed for fashionistas. You put that in your closet and show it your outfit for the day, and it'll make recommendations. Or say, you wore that yesterday, that kind of thing. That's not out yet. I've ordered all of them. I love them. I'm all in on the Echo. But the show is interesting, and I actually think, first of all, better speakers than previous Echoes, so you can actually use it as kind of a kitchen radio. You can make video calls with other show owners, but the thing I find most interesting, it's also an intercom. And you can make audio calls, or if somebody has a show, you can make a video call to anybody else in your contact list who is known to have an Echo, as long as they have allowed you to drop in. That's the feature they call us. At first, I thought drop-in was creepy because it looked like it turned on a camera anytime, but it doesn't. You have to give it permission for the camera. But for instance, for an elderly parent, drop-in would allow you to have an intercom with them, even if they aren't in the same home, if they're across the country. I sent my mom a show because I can say to the Echo, Echo, drop in on mom. It'll make a bloop in mom's house, and then I'll be talking to her, just like an intercom, as if she were in the same home. She can do the same to me. You have, you know, of course, all sorts of privacy features. You can have it disabled at certain hours of the day so nobody calls you in the middle of the night. You can have it only allow people in my own household to use it, which is how most people would want to do it. You can limit it. But I think the ability to have an intercom with your an elderly parent is a really interesting idea. Of course, you know, I mean, Google's doing similar things. You can make a phone call to any phone with your Google Home. You can't do that with the Echo. You can call any Echo, but you can't make a phone call to a phone. Google lets you do that. But Google doesn't have the intercom feature. I feel like this is in some ways, as simple as it sounds, a breakthrough technology. It's very interesting. Anyway, you'll hear more about it, I'm sure, over time. But the Echo Show, which is not cheap, I think it's $239, something like that. It's expensive. But I thought this would be so great because my mom and I are already doing video calls. This will be an easy way for her to do a video call. Puts it in her kitchen. We can talk while we're cooking, that kind of thing. We like to do that. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Bob in Pasadena, California. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey Leo. Or as I say, Leo Laporte, the only reason to turn your radio on the weekends.
Oh, you are very kind. Thank you.
Absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
And you cost me a lot of money.
It cost me a lot of money, if that helps any.
No, I could tell. I'm listening to everything you buy.
I buy. You know, and what I have a policy of not taking stuff for free from companies. I don't want to be biased.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. Which is insane. But I have a budget. I allow myself a certain amount of money a month to just because I also feel like you get it's a more honest reaction if you have to pay for it. If you get it for free,
absolutely.
It's not
total
you know,
integrity.
Well, you just don't. You don't feel the pain of buying it. That has to be part of the equation when you're reviewing something.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a great point. Yeah. That's funny. I'm aware of you on the weekends, but then I sit there and go, what does Leo do the other 5 days of the week?
More shows. I have a podcast network because I'm dumb. I make enough money on the radio show. I could live on the radio show. I could work 2 days a week and be happy.
Okay.
But I'm dumb, and I ended up starting a podcast network. I do shows, 2 shows a day, 5 days a week. So if you go to twit.tv, the website, twit.tv, that's all the other shows.
I have seen those, and I appreciate that you're dumb. It's my benefit.
Well, I'm also – I like doing it. I love talking about technology. It's really fun.
Oh, you can tell. You absolutely – it's just – it's great to listen to you. And I'm
Thank
not just
you.
Saying that because we're on the phone.
Very nice of you. Thank you.
May I ask you a question from a previous call that's not what I called for?
Yeah, of course.
It's a quick one. But, like, so I have, I'm kind of like an all Apple, you know, iPhone, iPad, and I've got Apple TV. Is there anything that Chromecast brings to the table that you would want to get one, even if you had the Apple TV?
Now that Amazon Prime is on Apple TV, or will be soon, I would say no, because you can do the Google stuff via YouTube on the Apple TV. There's no Google app. As there is on the Chromecast, but there is But the good news is there is YouTube and everything. You know, if you buy or rent movies from Google's store, you can see them on YouTube. So I'm trying to think. Okay. I think everything that, and of course, the Apple TV is the only way to watch iTunes music or iTunes movies or TV. So
yeah, that's the only reason I got it.
Yeah, no other device will do that. So I would say now that Amazon Prime was a big gap on Apple TV, but they've announced they're going to have that. I don't know when that'll roll out, but once that rolls out. Then I think, no. Oh, there's one other thing. It's only 1080p. So when you get a 4K screen, then it might be a disability because Roku can go to 4K. Android TV has 4K devices. Chromecast has 4K. Apple TV not. But I suspect Apple will remedy that this year. I would
They'll
not.
Eventually do it.
They have to. Yeah. There's got to be a 4K Apple TV. AirPlay works really well. And that AirPlay does everything a Chromecast will do and then some. Anything you can see on your computer screen, you can see on your TV.
Well, and you know that's one of the weird. I have a Denon AVR, yeah. Yep. And it was always a mystery to me that it would not show video, but it would do AirPlay audio.
Well, it's set up to do AirPlay audio, but you should be able to, even if you're using an AVR, you should be able to AirPlay to your TV.
Well, I can now that I have Apple TV, but it wouldn't do.
Oh yeah. No, that's right because it had audio AirPlay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. Your TV, some TVs are now getting AirPlay, I believe, as well. But until then, Apple TV is the only way to get the video.
Okay. So I talked to you a couple months ago and took your recommendation about the Synology NAS.
Oh, good.
And I mean, it's one of those things where I went online and it, you know, it's like, how big of drives do I get? And you look at a 2 gig or a 2 terabyte is. Like $99, a 4 terabyte.
I know. Hard drives have gotten so cheap. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So now here's my question. I you know, effortlessly put all my CDs on there because those are easy to do. Yeah. How do I get my DVDs and Blu-rays on there? And is it possible to put them on there so that they just look exactly, I mean, when you turn on the TV and go to it, it looks just like as if you were.
So you want to rip them, obviously, just like you ripped your CDs. Blu-ray, Blu-ray is highly copy protected, so you have to go offshore to rip a Blu-ray, and that means a company went out of business briefly, and I think their backs. It was a company called Slysoft that made a very good Blu-ray ripper, and there were two ways to rip a Blu-ray.
Did you say Slysoft?
Slysoft. Briefly went out of business. The movie industry hates them. They were the only way, you know. DVDs were cracked almost as soon as the format appeared by a high school student, and they remain cracked because there was no way to replace the key, the secret key. Blu-ray has a method for doing that, and the movie industry has been very protective of Blu-rays. However, programs exist, and you can either rip it as just the movie or you can rip the entire DVD menu structure and all, and then it'll be a file that will be playable on your device. It will look just like the DVD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So let me see what happened to Slysoft. Yeah, they're called Red Fox now.
Red Fox?
Red Fox. And they have a little bandana around their eyes because they have to acknowledge. They were in Trinidad and Tobago. But where they were basically immune from the movie industry, but they got caught. Okay. And so they have moved offshore. First, they went out of business. They take Bitcoin as a way of staying anonymous. They actually, this is good. They're a 20% discount right now. And what
so
you
is
want
that a is. Precarious road to go, or is that like, would you feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, it's technically illegal, but you're buying the Blu-rays, right?
Right.
So
right.
Here's my take on this. It's technically illegal because the movie industry and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prohibit you from making copies of Blu-rays even if you own them. In my opinion, if you buy a Blu-ray, you put it in a medium that you could put on a NAS, as long as you're not selling it, giving it away, putting it on BitTorrents, you're making a copy for your own benefit and your own purpose. That isn't a problem. That's ethically, at least, more completely moral because you're buying it.
Right, exactly.
So I don't have an ethical issue with it. It's technically illegal. I can't imagine anybody would ever be prosecuted for doing it. So it's merely a technical illegality. However, the company that made the software to do that, they got in trouble because they're enabling piracy, according to the movie industry.
Right.
So it's illegal to circumvent the DRM. So that's why they get in trouble. There is perhaps a loophole for home users because you're making a backup. But technically, that does not exist for digital. It only exists for analog media. They've never updated that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just lame. So I would say go to Red Fox, buy any DVD HD, which will let you burn Blu-ray, rip Blu-rays. You can rip them, as I said, complete, which will give you the menu structure, you know, extras, all of that stuff. It's as if you have the whole Blu-ray on your hard drive. It's much larger than. It's like 9 gigabytes. Or okay. You can, if you just say, I want the movie, you can use this to, or I think you can use Handbrake and VLC to do Blu-rays if you just want the movie. Well, Handbrake.
Handbrake
is a really great, Handbrake, like in the car, .fr. Okay. .fr. Okay. And I think that when you install it, it will say, well, we can't crack DVDs, but if you install VLC for playback, well, it just happens that in order to play it back, it has to put the key in memory, and we can see that key, and so then we can rip it. And the advantage Handbrake has is you can make a gigabyte file that is just the movie. None of the menu structure, none of the extras, just the movie.
Okay. Now, Red Fox, REDFOX.
.BZ.
B as in boy, Z as in zebra.
Yep. There's also WinX. Synapse says that's the best and cheapest.
W-I-N-E-X.
W-I-N-X.
W-I-N-X.
And a lot of people like Make MKV, which is a freeware program, and you join that with Handbrake. So there are lots of ways to do this. I think Red Fox, formerly Sly Fox, is the easiest, most straightforward.
Okay, and somehow you got to get your hand on Bitcoins to be able to...
Yeah. Well, yeah, so maybe that's a... You can go to Coinbase and buy them. That's a fairly simple thing to do. DVD Fab, I think we should probably put... all of this in the show notes because there's another one. DVD Fab will do it. They're saying a lot of different,
okay,
a lot of different choices out there, and some of them are free. I think Red Fox is consumer friendly.
Very okay,
easy to
I'll
use.
Check it out.
Yeah, and you're doing exactly what these things are designed to do, and I think it's perfectly fine. You're making a video jukebox.
Right. Right. And it's amazing how much space those things take up. And you also realize that 3/4 of the ones that you thought you wanted to copy, you should just throw away because you're never going to watch them again.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's one of the reasons I only buy Blu-rays for stuff that, for some, you know, maybe Godfather, something that's historic that you're going to, Citizen Kane.
Right.
Because otherwise, yeah, you're never going to watch it again. How often am I going to watch Hangover 2?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, hopefully never.
Hopefully never. Hey, nice to talk to you.
I appreciate it, Leo. Thank
sure, Bob.
You very much.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do they take PayPal? It's clear that they're trying now to stay under the radar, right? Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, it's time to talk computers and the internet and the home theater thing and the digital photography thing, the smartphones, smart watches, smart houses. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk high tech with me, I'm here. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada, outside that area. You could still use a voice over the internet product and call that number. You just need the ability to call a phone line. I guess you could. No, I guess you can't. I was thinking maybe you could use a Amazon Echo or a Google Home to call, but no, I think not. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Karen, Smith Center, Kansas, has been very patient. Thanks for hanging on, Karen.
You bet. Thank you. This is a question maybe you may have answered before. My husband said he thought maybe he heard it on the radio. We were looking for an external speaker for a TV when we're watching the television movies or radio or television shows. background noise is so hard, it makes it hard to and understand the voices. Is there something good that you would recommend for that?
Yes. And this comes up a lot. I don't mind answering it multiple times because it's a very common problem. I have the problem. As we get older, part of it is just ears reject with all that other noise, the center channel. But it also comes from the fact that movies these days are mixed in surround sound. And that means that movies are mixed to either 5.1 channels or 7.2 channels. Those channels include a center channel, which is where the dialogue lives, left and right, surrounds left and right. There might be back surrounds left and right, and a subwoofer, one or two. And when they mix it that way, they expect that you will have separate speakers for the background noise and separate speaker for the voice. But you don't, because your TV probably just has one speaker, and so it's all mushed together into a big, unintelligible mess. So the best way to solve this, easiest way to solve this, is to get something called a sound bar, which will allow you to create discrete channels for all of those. And all the sound bars I know have the ability to turn up vocals, turn up the center channel, because it's a very common problem. And certainly if you end up setting up a more elaborate sound system, if you have a big screen TV and, you know, you want surround movies, theater style surround sound, you're going to go out and get those 6 or 9 speakers and more if you want Atmos, and you're going to get an AV receiver that can power all those speakers, and it will have in its settings the ability to turn up the center channel. But even if you don't do that, just by virtue of having a separate speaker for the middle, for the vocals, the reason it's called the center channel is because vocals are not in stereo. If they wanted to have, you know, the bad guy on the left talking to the bad guy on the right, they would separate those out into the left-right speakers. But generally, dialogue in movies and TV shows is not stereo. It's mono, and it comes from the person on screen, which is kind of in the middle. So the center channel is really used for vocals. If you go to somebody, visit somebody's house that has a surround sound setup, and you go stand next to the center channel, you hear, oh, it's nice. I hear his voice. I don't hear all that background noise. There's no explosions. There's no music. There's no crowd noise. Just the guy's voice. That's beautiful. And that might even be enough just to separate them out into separate speakers. I find in most cases I can hear pretty well with the center channel. But it's nice to also have that ability to turn it up. So a sound bar is the simplest way. The problem is TVs today are sold with kind of, if they're sold with speakers at all, cheesy speakers, because they assume if you're buying an HD TV, you're going to put external speakers on it. So they don't have great sound. And you know, that's compounded by the fact that TV shows are mixed for multiple speakers. So I think getting a sound bar, the idea is it's going to improve the sound because the sound bar has better speakers. And inside a sound bar is a bar that is the length or width of the TV, I should say, the width of the TV that kind of goes under or above, doesn't matter, the TV. And it has multiple speakers in that bar, plus often has some computerized digital technology that enhances the sound stage even outside, beyond the sound bar. And tricks your ear into thinking that you've got sounds coming from behind you and from the left and from the right, when really it's all just coming from that sound bar. Those also have the capability of improving dialogue, so you'll hear it better. And that's really what you want. Enjoy your new sound bar. Nice to talk to you, Karen. I turned on my IQ camera, and now I'm hearing myself back in my phone. So let me turn that off. That's the camera that I had to take out of the house. Yeah, because the family said, we don't want a camera in the house. We really don't. And we, you know what? We live in a safe neighborhood. Nobody's ever in the house but us. So I'm putting it up here in the studio. Just wait. People say, what? How? I don't want a camera in the studio. They picked the wrong studio for that. Steve, Portland, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey, our little church group, we want to do a cooking class, and have a few of these shut-in peoples, and I just got an email today from another church I joined, YouTube, saying, hey, join our service right now live.
Isn't that cool?
Wondering if we could do a YouTube on this cooking class where all these shut-ins had to do is click on this little blue link, and they could watch our live cooking
show. Isn't that a nice idea? We do that, by the way. If you go to YouTube.com/Twit. That's my podcast network. It stands for This Week in Tech. YouTube.com/Twit. You can watch me do all my shows, including right now, live video. So how do we do it? Well, we have a box. A box your church is not going to want to buy because it's $25,000. And that's just the beginning, because we also have multiple cameras. Those cameras go into a video switcher. We've got an audio mixer. I probably have $100,000 worth of gear just so that you can watch me live on YouTube. That's ridiculous. Obviously, you're not going to do that. So let's do something simpler. One way to do it would be to get a camera designed for either YouTube Live or Facebook. Do you think Facebook would be a good choice for your parishioners?
Possibly.
Yeah, because they also allow live streaming. There is a really great simple solution that's fairly inexpensive from a company called Livestream. Livestream is another company that will stream live video like YouTube and Facebook. The nice thing about YouTube and Facebook, it's free. And everybody has YouTube and Facebook, so there's no, you know, real need to get people to download any special apps. So they make something called the Mevo Cam, M-E-V-O. And it's the cutest little thing. You could put it on a tripod. It's good for a cooking show, and I'll tell you why. It has a very high resolution 4K lens in it. But what that means is you can divide it up into four different high def streams. And so you can control it with an iPhone or an iPad. You can be the director and point the camera at the cook or the food. You have it's like having multiple cameras, but there's only one. Mevo also has a very nice follow feature that you can turn on that automatically will follow the cook. So the cook could move to one side, to the left, to the right, and the camera will pan as if there's a camera operator. Very cool. So that's Mevo, M-E-V-O. It's a couple hundred bucks. That streams to Livestream or Facebook Live. And I think Facebook might be a good choice for you because it'll send out a notification to everybody on Facebook who likes the church or follows the church. And it'll say, we're streaming live now. You might even have seen those if you're a Facebook user. Oh, you know, somebody's streaming live now. Sling has just released a similar live streaming camera. I haven't played with it yet. But the folks who do the Slingbox also are making something like this. But I've used the Mevo, and I really like the Mevo.
And we were just hoping to use a simple laptop with an external webcam.
Yeah, but the problem is the webcam is going to get this wide shot. You're not going to be able to get close-ups. This is a better solution, and it doesn't need a laptop. It'll stream live to a phone or a Facebook. So you certainly could do this with a laptop. You then have to get some special software on the laptop. There's a variety of programs that will do this. We'll put a list on the show notes that encodes the video, sends it out to YouTube. I think the Mevo is actually a better solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's expensive. It's $400. Hang on a sec. So, yeah, if you already have a webcam, the problem is if you think about what that webcam video looks like, right? Is it'd be hard to follow a cooking show. You'd be kind of at a distance. It's fine for a minister giving a sermon because you put it close enough to him and he's kind of on the – he's not moving around a lot. Cooking shows
– Actually, I was thinking of just mounting it from the ceiling, maybe on a PVC pipe, and so it would be looking down on the cooking table, so we don't really need to see the
– All right.
People. We just need to see the cooking ingredients.
So there are a couple of different programs that will allow you to stream stream to YouTube Live. What they really are is they're encoders. So they run on the laptop and then encode the video. Let me just see what YouTube recommends. I'm sure they have some recommendations for this software. Actually, you can do it from, come to think of it, I think you can do it from YouTube directly, can't you?
Yeah, I think so.
They have this Creator Studios tools that they recommend. If you actually Google, I just Googled live streaming on YouTube, they have a whole help page. But you might be able to just do it from the YouTube app on mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to do it from a desktop, you're going to need some special software. But if you do it from mobile, you can do it that way. This would work fine. So really, you don't need anything special. I don't know if you're going to use a laptop, though. The YouTube app...
Can I ask you a TiVo question?
Sure.
I got that TiVo Bolt, and I'm very disappointed in it because it's a supposedly a 4K box, and you can change your resolution to 4K or 1080 or 720. And I have to, I've got a 4K TV, and I even tried it on a second 4K TV, and I even sent this TiVo box back, so it's my second TiVo Bolt box. And it looks better on when I choose the native resolution of whatever the channel I'm watching is than what it does when I set it to 4K.
Right, because the channel's not 4K.
Right, but I
so it's upscaling to 4K, which is never going to look as good as the native because it has to upscale it. So it's processing it. So the reason you get the Bolt is not for upscaling HD programming, but for 4K native programming.
Yeah, but there is none.
Well, that's a good point. But so you're exactly right. This it probably doesn't have a very good scaler. So I would leave it on just the native content, and eventually you'll start seeing more 4K stuff. But you're right. For now, no broadcast channel is 4K.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could pull 4K off of YouTube.
Exactly. So if you're watching some 4K content, just always use native content because I guess that's all I've ever – I have a Bolt, and I like my Bolt, but I don't force lower quality content to upscale, and I suspect that's what's going on.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Scaling's hard to do. You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You can scale well, but you have to spend some money on some hardware, and I'm guessing the Bolt hasn't done that. It's pretty expensive to get a good HD to 4K scaler. But if you're looking at 4K content, that's what you get the Bolt for, is the 4K content. Netflix, YouTube, stuff like that. Have you ever tried this scaler, Mike B? Have you tried scaling up a lower quality HD video to 4K on that? I haven't tried it, so I don't know. I'm very happy with the Bolt because, what I had to do when I got a 4K TV is upgrade all of those devices in my AV cabinet. Yeah, Netflix is 4K. I watch a lot of 4K UHD, HDR stuff on Netflix, actually. It looks great. House of Cards looks great. The only problem with 4K is everybody looks older, including me. This is my song, Cult of Personality. Oh, man. I like this. I bought the album, but then this was the only good song. It's my personality. I think Michael Kosio was going to do a little commentary there, hoping that Leo, the old man, wouldn't recognize that song. Cult of Personality, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Now, if I can only get my old brain to remember the band.
Living Color.
Living Color, that's right. I bought the album. I like that song so much, but that was the, as used to be the case, when you had to buy the whole album to get one song, usually the rest of the album wasn't worth the money. Unless it's a Steve Martin album. Every cut, worth every penny. George in Abilene. George in Abilene, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
How you doing, Leo? I got a question about home networking. Trying to run lines to different rooms in the house. And when I got up in the attic to run Cat 6 line, I realized why the previous owners ran cable on the outside of the house under the eave. It's just no room up there to get up and work. It's a very low-pitched roof. So I stumbled upon MoCA adapters to use the existing one, and I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, MoCA is Ethernet over your existing coaxial cable. That cable was put in for television. And so if you have coax in every room, you can use MoCA. It's expensive because you have to buy adapters on every end. TiVo supports MoCA. So that's my only experience with MoCA, because you can have a TiVo in one room. Obviously, the TiVo's hooked up to the cable. TiVo in another room, and they can share as if they're on a network. I would guess that MoCA is like power line networking, which uses your existing power lines to send data, that it is probably not as fast as your Cat 6 cable would be. But it might be more than fast enough for your purposes. It just depends what you're going to do. If you're not transporting 4K video over, it's probably fast enough. There will be some degradation.
We have a TiVo box, and I checked it, and the MoCA was turned on it.
Right.
And I plugged in the Apple TV and did some testing, and it was getting 100 megabits.
Beautiful. So, because unlike your wiring, The cable's got that. That coax is thick. That's got a lot of carrying capacity, and probably cable TV isn't using a lot of it.
Now, is there a compatibility issue between different models of MoCA adapters or anything?
That's a good question. It's a standard. I would guess all of them would work the same. But as with power line networking, it's best to use matching endpoints.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. That saves you a lot of time and trouble. You know, Cat 6 or higher, the really high quality Ethernet cable is always going to be the best. But a lot of times you can't wire your house, but you've already got cable in there. Why not? Logan 5 tells me MoCA, M-O-C-A, and I didn't know this, stands for Movies Over Cable. Is that really what it stands for? That's pretty funny. ISDN, what did that stand for? Integrated Services Digital Network. So that has nothing to do with anything either. Thank you for the call, George. Moving on to Aaron in Carbondale, Illinois. Hello, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Help me, Obi-Wan Laporte. You're my only hope. I've had a professional Skype account since, I guess, 7 or 8 years now.
Yep.
And now they keep changing it, and now it's almost useless, its interface. I've got an iPod Touch, and I use it basically as a telephone whenever I got Wi-Fi. And it's the same with the app for the Android. It's just...
What happens? How is it unusable? Is it just terrible quality?
Well, the interface used to be I had like my contact list, so I could see basically... the people's names and their numbers, and whether or not they actually had a Skype account also.
Right.
So I could call anywhere, basically in the United States. Well, I was paying a little over $30 a year for the professional account, so I could have group chat and all that.
Yeah.
And they added some good features where you could share screens and. I was using that as like a teaching tool, but now Microsoft owns it, and I guess in their infinite wisdom, it wasn't messed up enough, so they've...
Yeah, Microsoft has not been a good custodian of Skype. I have to agree with you on that.
So I'm looking for an alternative. I know that there's like Google Hangouts, and there's, I think, Viper's another one. But
yeah. What is it that you most want to do? Is it the group chat?
I just want to use it as a telephone if I've got Wi-Fi. I have the... ability to just call, you know, anywhere in the United States. If I want to do like a group call, I can do that. A group video call.
Right.
You know, those are just some of the features that I'd like to use.
Well, certainly Hangouts is free, and there's a lot to be said for that. Although Google has not been a good custodian of Hangouts, they keep messing with that.
Yeah.
So Viber is. A very popular solution, especially in Europe. I've used Viber. I want to say they got acquired recently, but I'm not sure. There's a lot of these. There's a ton of them, and I guess you could just try them until you get one you like. The problem with it is the other end has to be using the same software, right?
Yeah.
So there's Tango, there's Viber, there's Line, there's, you know, one thing you might look at is Facebook Messenger, because it's likely that a lot of your colleagues and friends have Facebook. So if they have Facebook, they have Messenger.
Yeah. Well, as it is now, I'm using it as a telephone whenever I got Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So
are more sophisticated solutions that are a little harder to use but might give you better results. I've used one called Linphone, Linphone, and it's what we call a SIP program.
Yeah.
And it is capable of doing a lot of stuff, maybe even more than Skype can. Available for Apple and iOS Android as well as Windows and Mac. I think the name betrays its heritage. Linphone, I suspect, was originally a Linux tool, but it works quite well. I've found that its sound quality is among the best.
Yeah, so, that's another reason why I have Skype, because I tried way back when the Microsoft Messenger, and it was always janky. And
Skype had its own, and by the way, we use Skype for all of our podcasts because it is the best audio and video, and they're using their own technology, proprietary technology, which I think is better than anything else out there. But I also agree with you. Microsoft has kind of made it hard to use. We've had all sorts of problems with Skype. One of the things that Microsoft did is they shut down the ability to do peer-to-peer. Skype was originally a peer-to-peer network, which meant I could connect directly to you. Now we have to go through Microsoft servers. And that really kind of can mess up the call in ways that you no longer control. So I feel like you're right. Skype has been kind of messed up. A lot of people complained about it. Microsoft has mixed messages about what they plan to do with Skype and so forth. So you might be better off trying something else. And I just don't know which one is the best. We've looked at a lot of different solutions. We end up with using Skype because all of the programs like Linphone are all using kind of open source codecs, which aren't, I don't think, as good as Skype. But on the other hand, they work.
Yeah, and another issue is that I've got a contact list a foot long.
Well, so you can export that. Yeah, I know what you mean. And that you'll just have to export. I don't know where to go. I would say Linphone because that'll call regular phones too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You feeling all right? I'm feeling all right. I just wanted to mention, somebody had asked, I think last week, about the new Eero's. Eero, which is a sponsor of some of our podcasts, I should mention, E-E-R-O, was, I think, the first to really bring this idea of mesh Wi-Fi to the consumer market a little over a year ago. And now everybody's doing it. Google's doing it. Linksys is doing it. Netgear's doing it. But I always kind of had a soft spot for the Eero's because they were first and because they were so elegant. And they have really stepped up the game with their new Eero Pro. Is that what they're calling it? They have smaller devices called the Eero Beacons. They sent me a set. And I should say that while normally I do buy everything, and I certainly have bought more than my share of Eero's in the past. I think I've bought 5 or 6 units. They did send me the new Eero with the beacon. You get a base station that looks like the old Eero's, but it's tri-band. Instead of just having one 2.4 gigahertz and one 5 gigahertz band, it has one 2.4 and two 5 gigahertz bands. That makes a difference. It really does. And the beacons are great because you just plug them into the wall. That could be a negative because you can't position them for optimal radio connectivity. But it seems to be more powerful. I'd had trouble in the early days of Eero getting it to spread throughout my house. In fact, that's why I bought more Eero's. But this one does a very good job with just the base unit and two beacons. The beacons are nice because you're plugging them in, but they also have a nightlight. So I put them in my halls, and they light up the halls, and I'm getting very good results. They've also added, as a subscription, I think it's $100 a year, that seems to be the new kind of universal subscription price, $99, $100 a year, filtering. So they filter against malware, ransomware. They also can filter adult sites out. And one of the nice things, the things I always liked about Eero, is you can assign devices to people. So I can say, I don't want Michael to be able to go to adult sites or violent sites, our 14-year-old, but mom and dad can. And that really works very nicely. So that's a new feature. And I like the malware filtering across the board. I think that's really good. So initial reaction, anyway, to the new Eero, somebody was asking, very good. I really like them. Once again, they are a sponsor, and they did send me a free, I won't get to keep it, but they sent me a review unit. And I'm very impressed. I think they've made some great strides in the Eero technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. David's on the line from Pasadena, California. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I couldn't be better. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have a little issue, and I know that Epson is one of your sponsors, but I'm looking for a Wi-Fi color printer, and it's going to be for my home, but I do some work from it. But the issue I have right now, I have an Epson, I think it's an XD400, and since I don't print on it every day...
They get clogged, right? Yeah.
They get clogged, and you have to take the things out, and then you got to clean the head.
Drives me nuts. And it uses up a lot of ink when you run through the declogging process.
Well, and half the time the declogging process has, I mean, you literally have to remove the cartridge.
I had the same problem. Clean it. All inkjet printers have this problem. They're really not very good for very infrequent use. For that, you're probably going to want to go to a laser printer. Now,
and that's fine.
Let's ask the question, though. When you say color printing, do you mean color as in business graphics, color graphs, or do you mean photorealistic printing?
Not photorealistic, just business graphics, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I would look at, Epson makes them, but so do a lot of other companies, Brother, HP. I would look at it, and you can get, it used to be laser printers were really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They've got down to almost the same price as inkjet printers. Consumables are less because toner cartridges and so forth. You don't change them as often. They typically print thousands of pages, so the cost per page is usually lower on laser. They don't do good photo printing, but they're fine for color printing in the sense of, you know, a color business report, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's all I need.
Yeah.
And it's got to be Wi-Fi too.
Yeah, they all are now. So I personally stick with Epson. I still use the Epson. I've always used the Epson color laser printer. I find those very good. I think here at the office, we're using some sort of massive office printer from Kyocera, but I don't think that would be appropriate for home use. That's a big network printer and does all sorts of stuff.
And my budget, I mean, I'm willing to pay, you know, $300, $400.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah. You can get a good color. Look at Brother's line. Brother makes very inexpensive laser printers. And okay. And the nice thing about laser, you don't have to print every day.
That's awesome. Can I ask you one more quick question?
Sure.
That's not related to that.
Sure.
You were talking earlier about Amazon Prime is going to be on the Apple TV.
Yes.
In the future.
Yes.
Will I have to upgrade my Apple TV?
No.
I have like one of those old.
It's just an app. It's just an app that's been
upgrade.
Yeah, for some. It's not even an upgrade. You'll be able to download the app from the store just as you do other apps. No one really knows if it was Apple saying no to Amazon or Amazon saying no to Apple. My suspicion is they were negotiating over how big a cut Apple will take from movie sales and rentals, right? And Apple wants 30%, and I'm sure Amazon said, under no circumstances are we giving you a third of everything we make. So I suspect that was the battle. It was probably a mutually negotiated deal. But now that, whenever it happens, whenever you can download the Amazon app for your Apple TV, that was the one last big player that was not on the Apple TV.
Awesome, Leo. Thank you so much.
That'll be a big change. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Lots of companies make inexpensive color laser printers. Brother's probably the cheapest. I think they're great. And yes, you can get, of course, you've always been able to get Amazon on your iPad. And I guess you could AirPlay it. I think that's, you know, what we've been doing up to now. But it'd be nice to have it as an Apple TV native app. And that's what Apple announced at WWDC. I'll tell you, that's how big a deal it is. They announced it at their Worldwide Developers Conference. It was when they announced the new iPad. It's a big deal that they're announcing that. Let's move on to Keith Billings, Montana. Hi, Keith. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Keith, did I press the button? I did. Hello, Montana. Hello, Keith. He, according to the... Oh, there he is. Hey, Keith, you're on the air. Oh, no, I think he doesn't know he's on the air, so I'm going to mute that because I don't want anything too private to leak in. He's, according to Kim, he wanted to know about converting cassettes to MP3s. You can do that a couple of different ways. If you have a cassette player, you can just hook the audio out of the cassette player into your computer's sound card and digitize that way. That's not the ideal way to do it, but you do need to convert the analog audio on this cassette to bits. And the reason it's not ideal is just that cable from the cassette player's headphone jack to your computer's input jack, it can add some noise and so forth. There are companies like Crosley. Remember Crosley? That was the name of those great old beautiful radios in the 40s. Well, there's a company, I suspect it's not the same company, maybe it is, that making Crosley turntables. They also make cassette players that will convert to MP3 somewhat automatically. But if you have a cassette player, download a program called Audacity. It's free for all versions of Windows, Mac, Linux, and you can use it to record the audio if you plug into your sound card. And then you'll have, the reason you want an editor is because you'll have to chop it up a little bit into individual songs. Easy to do. I've done it. And it's probably a good idea because cassettes wear out. Those cassettes probably, you know, after about 10 years, they start to, the iron oxide starts to flake off and they won't be playable. So if you've got cassettes, you know, we had a cassette of Grandma and her Thanksgiving speech that she gave every year. And you know, you want to get that digitized before it's too late. The Giz Whiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, coming up with a Gadget of the Week. Stay here. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Oh, my goodness. If you're about to buy, I sound like Marge Simpson. Oh, if you're about to buy a new home or you want to refi, this is a good time to refi before interest rates start to climb, and they are about to climb. Rocket Mortgage. It comes to you from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, the one of the leading, I think they're the second biggest mortgage lender in the country after that big bank. And believe me, our last loan was with that big bank, and I'm never using them again. It took more than a month to get a loan, and they kept coming back for it. Well, do you have this document, that Quicken Loans, they're fast, easy. All you have to do is look at those all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards to see why they're so successful. But now they've gone a step beyond. They realized, Quicken Loans realized the mortgage experience just wasn't modern. It wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a technological revolution that's client-focused, and that's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage lets you apply simply and quickly and easily, and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Simple, full, confident. That's it. Those are the three words to remember with Rocket Mortgage. So you know you're getting what you need and what will work for you. And the thing is, it takes minutes. You can do it all online. You could do it on your phone. You could do it at an open house. Just fire up rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You could choose the term. You could choose the rate, although they will calculate the best rate based on your income, assets, and credit. So I would let them do that. You could submit all the paperwork you need online with the touch of a finger, because they have trusted partners with all the banks and everything. So they can get your pay statements and your bank statements and all the stuff that they need. And then they're going to analyze that all quickly because computers, right, in seconds. And within minutes, you're going to get a loan that's right for you. I love Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Make that your next mortgage lender. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And we thank them for making the Tech Guy possible. It's Bad, Bad Dickie D, the baddest man in town. Meaner than a junkyard dog, no. He's actually the sweetest guy you'd ever meet. Dick D. Bartolo. For many years, Mad's maddest writer. We call him our Gizwiz because each week he brings us gadgets and gizmos from all over the world. First of all, I got to say, yes. I saw the news that Mad Magazine is moving for years on Madison Avenue.
Yes, yes.
They're moving to Los Angeles. What the what?
Well, it's going to be strange because no one from Mad is going.
Okay. So that's weird. I mean, I guess you don't need to be at the office to be
Mad. I don't. But none of the staff who – I used to be on staff.
Oh,
but,
they're not going either. Huh?
A bunch of us got canned when it went from a monthly to a bi-monthly. They fired almost everybody, including me.
But you're a freelancer.
I'm a permanent freelancer.
Yeah, because you're in every issue.
Every issue for 51 years.
Wow.
But no one, like the art director, the current editor, no one on staff is moving. Oh. So there'll be an entire new staff come the first.
This could be the end of an era.
Well, it can be a different Mad, you know. Yeah. I met the new editor, and he said, no, we plan on...
He's a cartoonist. He has good street credentials. He's not completely out of nowhere, but he's not a Mad guy.
Worked for The Simpsons. Yep. He actually sold a couple of articles to Mad over the years.
Yeah.
He's the president of the Cartoon Society.
Right.
And also, I guess it's no secret. He's like 50, so it's not like...
He's not a kid.
A 50-year-old kid who never heard of William M. Gaines.
Right. So, no, yeah. I'm sure he's a mad fan. Well, I'm sure he said that anyway. And this is because it's owned now by DC Comics.
Yes, and DC moved 2.5 years ago, and we refused to go then. And they said, well, we have some office space in New York City. Stay. But now they said...
This is what everybody really wants to know. Is Alfred E. Newman going to stay in New York, or is he going to L.A.?
Alfred is going to be bi-coastal.
Well, I think he was always something. anyway, Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer. And by the way, if you want to relive the Mad's heydays, and I grew up reading Mad Magazine, my kids grew up reading Mad Magazine, Dick's written a book called Good Days and Mad that is a must-read.
And oh, thank
is
you.
Is it still, can you get it on Amazon if I go to Amazon?
You know what? You can get it through me. It might be on Amazon.
Go to Dick's website. Get it through him. Gizwiz.biz.
Thank you so much for that.
Oh,
I didn't want to write it, and I had lunch with his agent 3 times. I said, I'm not going to write a whole book. And the guy said, it would keep the memory of William A. Gaines alive.
Yes.
I said, I'm writing it.
Yes.
That was the key word.
Because Bill Gaines, legend. Legend,
yeah.
Legend.
Yeah, exactly.
Should I look Mad Collectibles? Is that where
it is? Yeah, I think it's under Mad Collectibles. You are so kind, my gosh.
Well, it's a great, and I don't know what's going to happen to Mad. It's
there
probably
it
going to change a little bit.
I'm sure Dick will always be a part of it,
but I have such great love and reverence, as does, by the way, so many of the people, including Lin-Manuel Miranda, who visited finally.
Yes.
Talk about waiting the last possible minute. The Mad offices. I saw a picture
of
you
and Lin.
Well, you
know, it was amazing. I emailed him Friday, and I said, Lin, I know you want to visit. We're not moving to the end of the year, but one has been uphill already measuring for shipping cases.
Oh, boy.
He emailed back and said, Dick, sounds urgent, Tuesday.
Nice. The creator of Hamilton, of course, and a much in-demand guy. And
yes.
I'm just so glad that he got a chance
yeah,
to meet him.
He was there for more than an hour. Oh. We had a wonderful time.
Well, I've done that tour, and it is amazing because you have...
Oh, we still have your footprints in the Linoleum Walk of Fame.
All right, enough of that. What do you have for us gadget-wise?
Oh, I tell you, you're a techie person, and you back up to the cloud. I mean, like, I'm still backing up to a weather balloon. But for people who want an easy way to back up everything on their phone, I found this 2 weeks ago at Digital Experience. It's called the Meme Memory Cable. And so it's a charging cable for your phone, but as you're charging your phone, it is downloading every single thing on your phone.
So it has a little, it's like one of those boa constrictors that ate a mouse. It's got a little lump in the middle.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And that's storage, I guess.
And that is storage. They have 32, 64, and 128 gigabytes and an Android version and iOS version. But what is neat is if you swap phones, when you plug it into the new phone, the screen will be split down the middle, and half will show what is on the meme memory cable and what is on your new phone. And then you just run your finger across all the things you want to go from your memory, from your old phone, onto the new phone.
How much storage is in this cable?
Leo, up to 128 gigabytes.
So as big as your iPhone or your – I mean, that's kind of as big as –
128 gigabytes is as big as the iPhone.
The biggest iPhone, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. And I guess an Android phone you could get more, but most people probably don't have them.
Well, you know what?
What does it back up? Everything?
Everything. Everything. They sent me one. I only got it yesterday. I plugged it in my phone. It took almost 4 hours to download everything because I have tons of movies on my phone.
How would you restore it? You could only restore it to a new phone, or can you restore it?
It does not work with your computer because it is encrypted.
Okay.
And you make up your own digital password when you first downloading it. So it's for transferring from phone to phone, and it can keep track of what's on 3 different phones.
Wow. So many people have asked this, and I, you know, in fact, somebody asked last week, and I said, well, go to your independent cell phone dealer, because they have a box that does this. But finally, somebody's productized it so you can buy it. How much does it cost?
It starts at $59 for 32 gigabytes.
That's a good price.
And it's a little more, as everybody knows by now, if you buy the Apple version. There's always that little Apple surcharge.
Well, they have to pay for the Lightning connector, that's why.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I think it's a great idea if you want something that's trouble-free, and then all the memory is right there in your hand if you want it to move it around.
This is awesome. Wow. Its meme is M-E-E-M, memory.com. Meme memory.com.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, and it's on my website, too.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the best way to do this is to visit Dick, which is gizwiz.biz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.B-I-Z. You could see notes for everything he talks about if you want to see.
Oh, and Leo, the new What the Heck Is It just started today.
Oh, what was it?
Oh, did you have no idea?
No idea.
Okay. Hundreds of people, maybe about 100 people, knew what it was. Just go down.
He takes a close-up picture of a gizmo or gadget. You've got to identify it. Is it like an air freshener?
You know what? The second most given answer was air freshener. Unfortunately, people, even though that's my own photograph, they were able to get it out of Google reverse photos.
Don't do that. Oh.
Yeah, I know. Kind of kills it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a clever idea. You put it in the tub. And if the tub starts to overflow, the weight on that triggers it to open.
Oh.
So it goes over your drain.
Oh.
And it also is temperature sensing color. And if the temperature goes over, I forgot what it's set at, and turns red or whatever, it means the water in your tub is too hot.
This is kind of cool. It's the magic plug anti-flow stopper. Anti-overflow stopper.
Exactly. And I bought it because I thought it looked funny on Amazon, and I thought, gee, no one's going to guess
it. It'd be great for that. Well, there's a brand new What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Go to Dick's site to play, and for rules, gizwiz.biz. Dickie D, thank you.
Thank you, sir. You're a very kind person.
Have a great week. Hey, thanks so much to Michael Cozio, our musical director, to Kim Schaffer, our phone person, to you for listening on this Independence Day weekend. I hope you had a good time. I sure did, and I hope you'll come back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts. For this show, we talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.